This is session two. You are in the workshop for strategies for financial health of the church. My name is Turin. Our presenter today is Mr. David Nisulo, and this workshop is sponsored by the New York Ministry Network. Wow. Thank you very much for your attention today.
Good morning, everyone. How you doing? Good morning. All right, good to see everybody. Now, last year I gave a similar workshop. It was about, it's all about the numbers and numbers tell the story, and I was tempted to put all that stuff in there. But what I did, I gave you in the handout the slides from last year because we talked more about numbers and budgets and percentages of payroll as a relation to income, things of that nature. But I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach. You have those handouts. We'll review some of it at the end if we have the chance. But I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach today. So let's look to a scripture that we're going to use. Luke 14, 28 to 30, and this is the middle of it. For who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there is enough money to finish? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and then everyone would laugh at you. And one version of the Bible says you would look like a fool. So we're going to talk about how healthy finances and mission are interconnected. It's where God's blessing are often found. When we talk about money and we talk about finances, I help a church, churches a lot with their finances. And a lot of times, how do we raise more money? Or how do we distribute our expenses? And we look purely from a financial perspective. The perspective I want to take is more from a missional perspective. What is our mission? Because God blesses the mission. Amen?
Amen.
God blesses the mission. Listen, if we could pray a prayer, God make us all millionaires, we'd all be millionaires. The fact remains that we're all not millionaires. I would venture to say that most of us are not millionaires. Only Eric is a millionaire, right, Eric? But most of us are not millionaires. So we often equate success for a church or a successful church with a large budget and large staff for ministry primarily funded by tithes and offerings. And consequently, I found when I go to church, I find a couple things happen. Number one, or a couple beliefs that we inherit. Number one, growing the church in size will automatically increase finances, which is an indication of health. Well, we think that growing a church will bring more finances sometimes. But if we have more people, we have more money, that means we're a healthy church. So essentially what we go after, what we tend to go after, is more attendance equals more offerings, which equals more health. So we're a healthy church and we have a lot of people. Now that could be true, but it may not be true. Or we're a healthy church and we have X amount of dollars in the bank, or we're in a building project, or whatever we're doing. That might be true, that might be an indication, but there could be more to the story. But the other thing that I found that happens when we take this perspective is another thing which is not as healthy. The problem is that congregants are not giving enough. We say to ourselves, they're not giving enough, they need to tithe more. And I've been in church situations where pastors are struggling and the ministries are struggling, and they said, well, the people need to tithe more, and we start putting pressure on the people to give more money. And it's to support salaries, mostly the minister's salary, which there's nothing wrong with, by the way, but the pressure begins to be put on the people, and the offering time, we have the sermon on the amount, every offering. All right? I've been to some churches where it's 15 minutes of talking about the offering and induce people to give more. So both of these perspectives can be dangerous because they divert our focus away from the core mission. Yeah, we need money to operate. We know that, right? There's a small verse in the Bible, in the book of Ecclesiastes, that said money answers all things. All right, so we know we need money to operate, but the danger is that we can get so fixated on growing the church and boost giving that we will become it, that we that it becomes the mission, and we ignore what the mission really is. This can lead to unhealthy decisions like giving that person a position because they're a good giver, so we don't want to offend them, or not issuing a proper standard or discipline because we don't want to offend that big giver. Oh, you know, they give a lot to the church. You know, we can't do that. Or compromise our membership standard to bring more people in. So what we do, we start re-looking at what does it mean to be a member. And in today's day and age, with the way laws are going, you have to be very careful who you make a member. I hate to say that, but we're talking about finances. Because it could very much compromise us for New York State and different things like that. Or compromise our membership standards, or justify becoming more attractional at the expense of being missional. It's okay to be an attractional model, but sometimes that replaces totally the mission. Or count the number of people coming in as success instead of measuring what truly matters, and that's making disciples. Friends, we can have a lot of people in the church, but if nobody's being baptized, And if nobody's being discipled, and if people aren't being saved, we just got a lot of people. And that's okay to have a lot of people and have good finances, but if we're sacrificing the mission and we're redefining those measurements for the mission, it only becomes about money. And then God is not going to bless it, and we're going to have an unhealthy church, and we're going to have unhealthy finances. So we shouldn't neglect tracking statistics. I believe in that. I believe every Sunday and every service we should track how many people come to church, how many are in children's church, how many adults we have, youth, things like that. We should always track our offerings. We should graph them to see the relationship of giving to attendance. So that tells us certain stories and tells us certain things that we could plan. However, it's vital to interpret these stats realistically and measure the right things. After all, numbers do tell a story. But we have to make sure we're telling the right story. So, I'm going to start with giving you a few statistics, and these are interesting. And we're sorry about the board. They were telling me that the guys who reinstalled it, they decided to put it low. I guess they have all three-year-olds in the classroom usually this time, all right? But this is a statistic that you'll find on the National Assemblies of God webpage about what's going on in each district. We are the New York Ministry Network. All right. Average Sunday morning attendance for our churches are 115 people throughout our state. Now, some may have 1,000, some may have 50, and some may have everything in between, but average attendance is 115. Our average adherence, we all know that we say, what is your attendance? Well, if everybody came to church, so 115, the average adherence in our churches in New York State are 196. On average, 20% give regularly. So 20% of those who attend give regularly, so that's about 39 people on average give to the church. Ouch, right? You didn't like that one, all right. All right, so on average, we can expect about $20 per person on Sunday attendance, which is $2,300 a week, to as much as $50 or $5,600 an offering. So every person you have in your congregation represents a giving unit for measurement for statistical sake. In general, it could be anywhere as low as $20 per person to as much as $50, depending on your culture, depending on the income, culture in your church. And we could use those numbers to project forward what our budget can be. Now listen, we believe in faith. We believe God will supply our needs, right? Absolutely. Definitely believe it. And we've all had those conversations before. But there's also an understanding that we can project to say, God, we need some more faith in this area. Help us to understand by faith what missionally we need to do to make these numbers work better. So it's okay to gather information. Now, people say, oh, it's not about numbers. Friends, it's all about numbers. You've heard me say this before. We have a book in the Bible called?
Numbers.
Yeah. And what is it about? It's about numbers. All right? So numbers are important. And we just have to know what to do with those numbers and how to interpret them. Next. In general, since COVID attendance, numbers have been on the decrease. We had a total of 45,286 people on average come to attending our churches in 2019. Since 2022, after COVID, it's dropped 10,000 people. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, and that looks grim, but you know, if there's online, that can't be measured. There's some other things. There's some switching around. People are coming to church now on average of once every 3 weeks. It used to be once every 2 weeks. But that helps us understand the numbers we talked about before about who comes, you know, if they give finances, and we could kind of measure that a little bit. But we see that there's been some issues, at least, with attendance, and that talks about mission as well. What are we doing as a church? Now, COVID, we took a big hit, and it's back on the rise a bit. I have noticed, trying to keep track of time, I have noticed that the past year, in 2013, at the end, a lot of churches were struggling. There seems to be a resurgence of people coming back to church in 2023. In 2024, the numbers seem to be rising. There's a resurgence of people coming to church. So we thank God for that. Got that so far? Okay. So, in the 21st century, more and more people do not identify with any religious affiliation. We call them the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, not N-U-N. All right. So we call them the nuns. So what's unique about the nuns in the 21st century, in the 2000s? Number one, they don't know about our churches. They don't visit our churches. They don't care about our churches. And even if they do come and commit to the church, it takes at least 1 year before they're trained in tithing, and then we have to determine if they're going to be an attender or an adherent, or they're going to be one of the 20% that are going to give. So even if new people come to church, it's going to take at least a year before they understand giving, and then they're going to decide if they're going to be one of the 20% who tithe regularly and give regularly. So we have to take this all into account, but we also have to understand that we still have to be focused on the mission. Certainly, while there may be exceptions and nuances and room for discussion for each of these points that we made, the suggestion is that relying solely on offerings and attendance for sustainability is becoming increasingly unreliable. Now you're like, oh my goodness, but doesn't the Bible say we need to teach tithing and giving? Absolutely, we do. But we see, based on the culture that has been developing over the last 25 years, that the people don't see that. They didn't see it before, but at least they had a church background. The nuns have no church background. They have no idea. They, as a matter of fact, I love when they do word on the street. You ever see that on the news? Yeah. Word on the street. And it, I mean, you look at all the, at Columbia University, they just had the picketing for Palestine, which is, that's fine. But you ask them, what are they picketing for? They didn't, one girl said, I don't know. I'm just here because everyone else is here. And they don't even know that that's what we're dealing with today that we haven't dealt with as much before. We basically dealt with people who had a church mentality. At least they had a grandmother or a mother or a cousin or something. That doesn't exist anymore. More and more, we're dealing with the nuns, so we have to look at finances a little bit differently, not only from a financial perspective, but also from a missional perspective. And here are some things that we have to look at. Because we're so used to, you know, how many know that saying, put your eggs, people put their eggs all in one basket? What we do a lot of times, even as a church, we put all our eggs in one basket. God is more than a one basket egg. All right, there's more opportunity out there that we have to search out. So many churches do just that. They are looking solely at tithes and offerings in that basket. And what if there were different avenues that can be considered that will help with diversification and encourage the church to be more missional at the same time, thus fulfilling the Great Commission and bringing overall health to the life of the church? Friends, we're in a dynamic shift in our culture, which means we need to rethink our funding strategies. We need funding models that not only raise financial support, but also enhance the effectiveness of fulfilling the Great Commission. And there are some funding strategies that we can kind of look under. So this is the nuns. The nuns, the atheists or agnostic, they're skeptical about or don't like or don't need religion. Most believe in God or most do believe in God or a higher power, but they want to stay away from the church. They don't like religion. About half say spirituality is very important, but 43% say religion does more harm than good. 41% say religion does equal good and harm. So you got 84% really pay no attention to religion. And we represent, as a church, we represent religion. Now, how do we be missional and represent Jesus? And it would help our strategies as well to be missional, but also help the funding in the church. So let's look at, we look at budgets, we look at tithes and offerings, those things we all have to do. And we could talk about that if we have time at the end. But things, they're changing. Things are changing. So we've come across five funding streams that we may be able to use as a church that will enhance us as a church, how we could minister, but also utilize some things and funds that are out there. All right? So we got five of them here. Let me talk about them real quick. Number one, tithes and offerings. There will certainly continue to be a funding stream for churches. It's also an important financial stewardship responsibility for being a healthier follower of Christ. So we believe in tithing. We believe in offerings. We should continue to preach that. As a matter of fact, a couple times a year there should be a sermon or a teaching on finances, whether it's just not necessarily saying you need to give, but talk about the blessings of giving and talk about the principles of giving and how God blesses, how God owns everything. There's a whole series. There's Financial Peace University, for instance, for people that maybe are in debt. Get rid of debt. That's a whole nother topic. Topic I'm very passionate about. I believe it's okay to go into debt, but the way we go into debt, we need to be very careful. All right? So it must be taught as part of any discipleship process as a practical biblical stewardship process. But here's something else that maybe we don't consider all the time. Donor-based giving or donor-based stream. This includes all giving or any kind of giving to the ministry of the church that is received from an individual or an organization that may never be part of the church. And whether it's in the form of monthly support or one-time gift to outreach or projects, this can be accomplished through fundraising training. So for example, the church will be coordinating a community project. Some may call it an outreach event that is in the interest of the community. You could partner with the community. Communities have funds and do things, so we could be a part of it, even organize it, and you don't have to pay for it, but it helps fulfill the ministry. Understand that?
Yes.
You're looking at me like, okay, that's okay. Funding, whether financial or with goods and volunteers, may be obtained from outside sources, and that does a few things. Number one, it helps supply resources for the project without church funds. So if the community is doing something, it could be the Red Cross, for instance. You can say, well, they don't let us preach the gospel. You're the gospel. Bring the gospel there. Oh, there's X Assembly of God or X Church, those people. What great people. They get to know you. You bring awareness to you. And eventually it's going to lead to a redemptive conversation. But there may be people interested in it. It helps fulfill your mission as a church, and the community is already doing it. They may not be bringing Jesus there, but you are. So you could certainly do that. So number one, it helps supply resources for the project without church funds. Number two, it creates awareness in the community that the church is here to serve. A lot of times we go to our public officials like, what are you doing for us? Why don't we say, what can we do for you? We have people. I remember one church a part of that the church joined the Chamber of Commerce. And they needed the Christmas decorations, the light bulbs changed. So we said, we'll do it. So we just took all the Christmas, the ones that hang on the street, in a small town, we took all the Christmas decorations and we changed all the light bulbs on them. They were so appreciative, like, man, that church is awesome. And the staff did it. We took a couple of hours as a staff and as a team, and we all did it. And I cut my finger on the bulbs. The scars of ministry, right? It creates a good reputation for the church, and it begins to create relationships that can lead to redemptive conversations and discipleship opportunities. Can someone say the Great Commission? You just get there, your presence there, you begin to build relationships and awareness, and it brings redemptive conversation because they see how we love one another and they see how we interact with one another. You begin to have friendships, and if you track your discipleship process, if you reverse engineer it, you will see that you got saved because you made a friend. You built a relationship, and that was the start of your journey to become a disciple. Number three, co-vocational income. A lot of us don't like this. The problem with calling it bivocational is that it gives the impression that you are dividing your time between work and ministry. But co-vocational understanding is that it's more compatible and it's complementary. And this is what we mean. For example, serving as an Uber driver, for example, or working in the local shop or grocery store or wherever it is in your community gives you the opportunity to be missional, meeting people, getting to know them, and getting to know the names of people to pray for, and bringing in funds for your family at the same time, supplementing the burden to the church for a time. So if I'm working locally, or if I get a job outside, you know, some of us with maybe smaller churches, you know, we say the church needs to support us, maybe so. But in the meantime, what are you going to do? And unfortunately, I'm just going to be direct, a lot of pastors say the church owes me this money. No, they don't. If they only have a certain capacity, we may have to do something else. I've been co-vocational on and off my whole ministry. I really have been. I've been co-vocational, and you say, well, you got a position at the network. Sometimes you got to go do things. But what it does, it gets you in an environment where you're a light to the world. It takes down the burden of the church to support you, and you're being missional in the community. And you're teaching your people how to be missional as well. So it's not like I got this identity and I got this identity. No, I identify with Christ. No matter where I am, we heard Sister Esther say that. We are people of God, and we represent him wherever we go. So you meet people, and then you begin to pray for them. You become intentional. Because when you pray for people, something starts. They may not even know it that you're praying for them. But you mention them by name. You are starting a spiritual event in their life, and eventually at some level, you get to know their name, they get to know your name, you get to see them, you get to pray for their family, you get to share stories, then they are comfortable with you, and they're one of the nuns that know nothing about church, but they know about you. And then the conversation will come up, and you say, you know what, I've been praying for you. And when people hear that you've been praying for them, they don't know anything about church, they just know something about God. Wow, you're praying for me. And it will start a redemptive conversation. Let's move along because we have limited time. Number four, not-for-profit partnering. There are many communities already have a variety of not-profit organizations doing wonderful things in the community. Guess what? They already have funding. And you, all you have to do is show up and bring the church with you. This relieves you from creating a new ministry and trying to fund it. I don't know how many churches next door to each other and organizations need to start a food pantry. How many food pantries do you need right in a row? Why can't we say you have the food pantry, and then we're asking our congregation members to give money to the food pantry, and it's taking away from the tithes and offerings, frankly. Why don't we just take a group of people and say, you're having a food pantry? We'll help. They're already funded. It costs us nothing. We're saving money, but we're bringing Christ to that community and Christ to that situation, whether it be another church or whether it be a not-for-profit organization. That's okay. It's who we are. You get it? So there's a funding opportunity that all you got to do is show up. I lost my not-for-profit. That's where we're at. Of course, you want to do your research in that not-for-profit to make sure the values coincide with our values. But obviously, if they're not a Christian organization, they're just a secular organization, they're not going to bring Christ to the situation. But if there's certain things that we can work with, unless it's totally off the wall, then why not bring Christ to that situation? Okay? But it's a not-for-profit organization that already has the funding for that. So things are already happening in your community. You need to find out what they are. Whether it's a food pantry, what about a sports league or a little league? Maybe your church can't sponsor a sports league, but maybe you could be part and help out and volunteer and bring Christ to the situation. You're saving money on your outreach. You have an automatically built-in outreach. After-school programs like tutoring or join the Chamber of Commerce or something along those lines, they're win-win situations. Or some may want to start their own alternate not-for-profit corporation. I just learned this. Do you know that your local congressman, senator, on a federal level, on a state level, and a local level, they have a discretionary fund that they have to give away? And if you are a not-for-profit corporation, maybe not necessarily a church, but a separate one, they will say, okay, we'll write you a check for $100,000. I was just talking to a pastor 2 weeks ago. He's in New York City. He got 2 grants for $1 million apiece because he has a relationship with the 2 senators in the area, his federal senator and his state senator. They each had $1 million. Like, Pastor, we love what you're doing because they have a lot of big outreach, the homeless and all that kind of stuff. $2 million he was given. And you know what? He uses church people to serve the not-for-profit. Now, he can't be a church. They can't do certain religious things, but you're bringing you to it. And you got $2 million. Now, you have to fill out grants and understand the certain rules and make sure it works with who you are and what you're doing. But there's money there. We just sent an email out to a few churches about Department of Homeland Security is giving grants out up to $100,000 for security systems. What's big in the news with security systems today? Synagogues and churches. You guys got one. I sent it. All right, so we need a security system. Cost big bucks. Wow, they're going to give us a grant and no strings. We got to find out what it's about, but there's an opportunity there. And lastly, for-profit partnerships. The church might have either the personnel or the real estate to begin a for-profit initiative that would help cover costs for being and bring exposure to the church. For example, good pastor friend of mine, you may have heard of him. He's a two-time world champion jiu-jitsu champion. What he's doing, the church is smaller, they're having some struggling, so what he's doing is opening up the lower level of the church, and they're bringing kids in the neighborhood to learn jiu-jitsu, and he's teaching them. They pay a certain amount. It helps support him because he's a full-time pastor, but he's also doing what he loves, but he's reaching children in the community. And they're using the church property, which which hasn't been, which isn't used during the day. It's an empty basement, and they're teaching people, and they're bringing them in the church, and they're like, oh, this ain't so bad. Now, you have to be careful what you do. There's certain tax ramifications and things of that nature. But you know what? We as ministers and a lot of people in ministry think tax exemption is a catch-all. Paying taxes is a cost of doing business. It's okay. It's okay. My background is accounting. It's okay. Pay the taxes. The thing is, you never go broke making a profit. Did I ever say that to you? Yeah. You never go broke making a profit. So you can get involved in a profit-making adventure or venture. There are some churches that are not in a church building. They're renting a warehouse. Why can't you sublet it for a bit? Now, you have to see who you're subletting it to, and you have to have certain information. Do your homework. But there's an opportunity that if you, even if you start a business, there's one ministry, when he was in business, he was a dance studio. He used to teach children dance. So he said he wanted to play in a church, so what he did, he started a dance studio. During the day, it pays for the rent, pays for everything, and pays a salary, and at night they have church and Bible study. It's a unique idea. Eric, I know you're going on a venture. We talked about it with computer. I think you're doing a session on that, right? At Network Conference. He's doing a session on some profit things that help the church, helps ministry, but also brings in some money, hopefully. So subscribe to what Eric is going to be doing with computer security. There's other things that we could think of. We just got to get more creative. What about starting a tutoring program in the church? We have these empty buildings. Start a tutoring program. Charge a certain amount of money. What about a whole homeschool co-op? With what's going on with schools today, people, Christian and non-Christian, saved and unsaved, don't want their kids in public school. But a homeschool co-op, you provide some education and a location for them to be, and you charge a nominal tuition, it brings money in, it gets people in the church. We had a pastor do that. During COVID, his congregation quadrupled. He went from 50 to 200 people in September. During COVID, 2020, towards the end of COVID, I think 2020, because the vaccine, no vaccine, they started a homeschool co-op. All these kids came in, and he had his youth group explode overnight, mostly with unsaved people. One by one, they began to get saved because there were relationships built, but it was a profit. They re-engineered the whole church. The whole church is brand new because the school co-op brought in all those funds. So of course, in all these things, you have to have proper management, budgeting. You need liability and legal requirements, etc. You have to research all that. But it can be part of a well-thought-out ministry plan that brings financial health to the church overall, and is part of fulfilling the Great Command and the Great Commission. And the tithes and offerings will now be an added blessing to top off the income provided or produced by these revenue streams. And the pastor won't have to worry enough about money, or have to worry about money that where's the salary going to pay come from, or am I going to get paid this week? Now, I understand that not everybody's super entrepreneurial. Everybody has their gift. But there are certain things we could kind of just look into and do a little research that, hey, maybe there are some possibilities. Maybe we have to kind of get together and brainstorm. A lot of you have business people or people who are entrepreneurial in general in your congregations. Now, it doesn't mean you let them run amok. We still have our values we have to hold on to. We still have our constitution and bylaws. We have certain things that we have to adhere to. But there are ways to not only be more healthy financially, but also help fulfill the Great Commission and the Great Command. In the next minute, you have a bunch of slides. Thank you. You have a bunch of slides that are attached that talks about budgeting. It talks about statistics, about the relationship between your income and different expenses. For instance, what percentage should payroll be of your total offerings, understanding of debt, things like that. I thought I would have some time to go over that, but we won't. If you want, you give me a call. I'll talk to you. Some of you I've talked to already. And we've talked about this stuff. But budget and numbers are a very important part to be healthy in the church, but it's got to be done the right way. And I will stop 10 seconds early. Ain't I a hero?
You do. You have about 40 seconds. But
thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much for attending. We appreciate you.